if someone's ever given you one of those monthly subscription gifts where you get the chocolate of the month, or this is a real one, the socks of the month club, every month you're like, oh, that's a fun little gift, and it reminds you that they were thinking of you. Well, buckle up, Buttercup. We're about to take subscription services to a whole new level. It's the Chicken of the Month Club. That's right. You can join me and other potties and WayFM listeners at fh.org/Wally Show and give two chickens to a different family every month. Now, chickens in these developing countries make a huge difference in the lives of these families. These chickens provide a sustainable source of protein through their eggs every day, which helps nourish malnourished kids. And since chickens multiply quickly, it's a great side hustle for these families in that they can generate income by selling eggs or chicks in the market. And by you doing a $28 a month gift, you can make sure that a different family gets two chickens every month. That's kind of cool and very different. If someone gave me two chickens every month, I wouldn't know what to do with that. But in these other countries, they not only know what to do with them, they're also very thankful for people thinking of them and helping them out of these tough times. So what I love about Food for the Hungry is their mission to end poverty by going to the places and walking with some of the world's most vulnerable people, and they've done it for 50 years. You can trust them and you can do some good right now. So go to fh.org/Wally Show if you want to join our Chicken of the Month Club. Welcome to the Wally Show Aftercast, those things we didn't get to during the course of the show today, and I'm going to thank you in advance for being a potty and listening to this craziness.
Oh, look at you.
I was just reminded, I saw something on podcast the other day, and there was like, just because you can do a podcast doesn't mean you should, because a lot of people like just do podcasts, and they're just done so badly, man. Yeah. Like, oh, I got a new podcast. There's like, I can't go a day without meeting somebody who goes, oh, I got a new podcast. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, great. And it is good, you know, because it gives you the outlet to have a voice, you know. But to me, it's like, always you got to do something with it. Say something, do something with it. Like, again, I stand amazed at people. Like, I get our other podcast that, like, it's the show and it's all produced and everything, but the fact that people listen to this podcast and enjoy it and like it and listen to it, like, all the time, I'm humbled by that, truthfully humbled by that. So thank you.
And maybe we should do something, because I know in the past we've said, like, go, people ask to go and rate it. Mm. And I guess that does something.
I guess, yeah, like, people that know more about podcasting and care about, like, the numbers and stuff, I don't think about the numbers. I just like to come in and do it, and if it grows, then great. But, like,
but
I know Zach has told us.
Yeah, and if we get better numbers, then right, there's a good chance that you can get more.
And we could quit the terrestrial radio someday and just do a podcast 24/7. That'd be kind of cool.
So go and rate us.
Yeah, if you want to rate it,
we don't really
share
know
it,
what that means, but
five
just
or
do
ten
it
stars or yeah, however many
a
there
million
are
stars. Yeah. Rate it with a million stars.
Go,
that'd be
beyond
fantastic.
I doubt that's an option.
You smash the like button. I like when people do all that, like, social media stuff. Like, if I'm watching YouTube, I've been watching a lot of YouTube lately. Have you guys seen that yet? Okay, usually we all share a work account, a YouTube account, and most of the time my computer, it's my work computer, it's always logged into my work account. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, because when I watch a bunch of videos there, they show up for everybody as recents. And I'm curious, what are you seeing?
Let's see. There's an e-skateboard one.
Okay, I was logged into my work
Ted
one.
Lasso thing, yeah, an electric motorcycle.
We can usually tell what you're into.
Absolutely.
Around that time.
Yeah, that's skateboard, the funny thing. You guys can see everything that I'm starting to
that's
get into.
Funny.
And so, yeah, I was in a rabbit hole last weekend looking at electric skateboards, because I'm like, I really want to do one of those. And then my buddy is thinking about getting an electric motorcycle, so I looked into that. And so I'm looking at all these different things, e-foils, windsurfers. Like, I'm looking for another sport to do in addition to my mountain biking.
So does this fall into midlife crisis?
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, I've never denied that. There are some guys that are like, oh, I'm not in a midlife crisis. I'd say less crisis. Is it's like, when you get older, there's things you still want to do to be active that are fun and to be somewhat younger, make yourself feel younger. So there is a part of that.
And you feel like you need to do it before you die.
Absolutely. And you have the ability to now. You have a little bit of a change in your work schedule. You've got a little bit more money. Like, there are so many things that I wouldn't wanted to do when I was a kid that I couldn't afford to do. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd love to have a classic hot rod, but I couldn't afford it back then. Mm-hmm. And now I just don't have a place to put it. Like, you know, and so I still won't do that. But I do like doing activities.
I will say that my grandpa is 70, he's between 75 and 80 now, and he still does go ski a few times a year.
But wow, good for him.
He's done a really good job of keeping himself in shape and working out and doing all these things. But, you know, like, I personally, like, the last time I went skiing, and I know you went skateboarding over, snowboarding over the break, like, it's a lot of, like, work on your
tired
legs. And I can't imagine, like, I did it at 22 and it was exhausting.
Yeah.
I don't know how he does it at his age.
I know, that's amazing. But see, old guys have figured it out. They just go a little slower. They don't go as hard. And like when you're playing golf with an old guy, you're like reaching back to hit as hard as you can and hit as far as you can. And old guys just take a nice, easy swing, and they go down the middle, and they're happy to get there in three instead of two. And it's just a much happier life. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so that's what, yeah. So I'm not midlife crisising, but I definitely enjoy looking for new things to do, and I like learning about things, and so that's why, like, I'll over research stuff like this electric skateboard. I cannot tell you how many YouTube videos I watched on that, because I also want to make a good purchase. I think my wife's a little concerned, though. Like,
as she should be.
Yeah, because she doesn't want me to get hurt. But
as she should.
We just refinanced our house with United Faith Mortgage, and I cannot tell you enough about how great the experience was with them. So if you want to check them out, UnitedFaithMortgage.com. But it was unbelievable, like, how easy it was. And I am pulling a big chunk of money of equity out of our house, and I think my wife is a little concerned about what I want to do with it.
What's he going to do?
I know. I think she is, because to me, I'm looking at it as like mad money.
Wow.
Yeah, and like big toy mad money.
So there is a reason she should be concerned.
Because my mortgage stayed the same, because I had so much equity and so much, and the interest rates dropped so much that I'm paying the exact same and getting this chunk of money out that I can use to do some fun things. And so things that I would never do otherwise, and I'd never splurge on myself otherwise, now I'm like, okay, yeah. Three drones is fine. You can have two, but have three different ones.
You don't use your one that often.
I know, but now I can have
Gavin.
Them. No.
Oh my gosh.
I'm going to pretend you didn't even say that, Gavin, as a man. Like, don't do that, and especially in front of the lady. Like, don't undermine me. And especially if my wife ever hears this.
Oh, my word.
Okay.
Your response is you need all three of those, maybe get a fourth.
She'll appreciate me.
So, yeah, there we go. That's what I'm doing right now. But speaking of getting older, there is a dude, he's only 57, so he's, 4 years older than me. He is the first recipient of a genetically modified pig heart. Isn't that crazy?
So what does that mean by genetically whatever?
Genetically modified. What they did, because a pig heart is similar to a human's heart, but mm-hmm. There are differences. Mm-hmm. So they genetically modified it, I guess, and they had pigs that had hearts that were modified. Part of the modification was taking out the things genetically in that heart that would cause a human body to reject it, because that's the biggest problem with transplants is rejection, because your body fights this foreign object, and so they're trying to combat that ahead of time. But his family said he's doing great. He can no longer stand the taste of bacon, but other than that, he's fine.
He didn't say that. Oh my word.
But because of the severity of his condition, this was an all or nothing thing. Like, they weren't going to give him another human heart, because I guess he wouldn't have qualified, because there's so many people that need it that would have a better chance at living. This was this guy's only option. So the Food and Drug Administration did like a temporary, like a one-time, here you go, try this.
Might as well.
Yeah, I mean, if I was in that place, I'd be like, definitely try it on me. Yeah. I don't care. If I don't wake up, I don't wake up.
Wow, that's so good, because now, you know, instead of having to be put on a list for some kind of organ, you know, you don't want anyone to die because of you. But, you know, with a pig, it's different.
Well, yeah, but that's the thing you mentioned about that. There's like 110,000 people on the organ transplant waiting list, and about 6,000 people die a year. So if you could tap into that and genetically modify these hearts, this is where science is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like, if you could do that, then you could help prevent people from dying every year. And they do say, though, they're like, this is like a real rare one-time thing. It is moving towards this, but we're not there yet. Mm-hmm. And so they're like, you still, please don't think we don't need organ donations anymore. So check that off on your driver's license.
They don't have thousands of pig hearts in waiting for all of us.
Yeah, I'm sure that one wasn't cheap either. Ooh. You know, like,
I wonder though if he goes by a deli anymore and like his heart kind of starts to.
It would be weird. Like, there was that one like sci-fi, or not sci-fi, but just thriller movie where somebody got like a heart transplant or something from a convicted murderer. And they had like flashbacks to the bad things this person had done. Yeah. They might have even gotten like a limb from him or something, and that limb like took on its own
life.
Yeah,
that
sounds
ridiculous.
It's a movie. It wasn't real. It was a movie.
That sounds ridiculous.
I know.
You know, there's a rom-com called Return to Me.
With
David Duchovny. Mm. And
that was a little bit of an over-exaggeration for me, but I love it.
It has to do with a heart transplant.
Minnie Driver's in it. She's great.
But the heart was from a human.
Yes.
But, The thing is that the heart belonged to someone who could communicate with the gorillas in the
zoo. She was a gorilla trainer, basically.
So now, what's her name? Molly?
Minnie Driver.
So Minnie Driver is the recipient of the heart, and now the gorilla communicates with her.
Right. And then, through a series of happenstance,
she finds love.
Yeah, they find love. I think they travel to Italy.
At the end, she does alone. Yeah. We're giving it away.
I'll tell you, like, as far as romantic comedies or things like that go, I did like that one.
That's so good.
I think that's the one where we got the line, Zach and I used to always say, Italy. I didn't know she was in Italy, because it was like the brother-in-law or the brother trying to figure out where she went.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was it. But yeah, that is a good one for sure. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with this and where this actually goes. Then you get, okay, now here's where you get into the weird morality of it, because we talk about science, advancements in science to the point where we're at now and where we could be in 50 years can also bring about not only scientific change, but they can enter into moral and ethical dilemmas. Okay. So what if you could clone people? You know, they've cloned sheep and things like that. What if you could clone a person that would be an exact clone of somebody who needed a heart, and then you take that heart? Like, that's there's another movie called, I think, My Sister's Keeper, where they had another child so that that child could provide some organ or bone marrow or something that's for their sick child, you know? Mm-hmm. And then when this girl finds this out, she's all upset and stuff. And like, but again, those are the morality questions that come into play when we try to play God, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's a real weird set of ethics to live in. And it's fascinating to me, but it's super confusing. Because what if you could genetically engineer this sub-level human, you know, you could, I'm speaking hypothetically, where you could, you know, okay, well, we're not going to give this human, like, we're going to engineer this so this human doesn't really have, you know, a brain necessarily, and it's just for organs or whatever, so they're actual human organs. Like, if you could get to that point, like, then you're like, ooh, this is really weird, you know? And so, mm-hmm. I'm just thinking ahead.
Oof, that's a lot to fathom.
Thinking ahead. Well, when you think about it, think about all the questions that have come about recently or just over the years over, like, in vitro, you know, and surrogates and all of those questions that, you know, 25, 50 years ago weren't being addressed. And mm-hmm. then now you're like, oh, we actually have to address this. Cryonically freezing embryos that have been fertilized. And so now the moral and ethical dilemma of if you have had your kids that you want, you don't want any more kids, do you throw those away?
Yeah.
And is that in essence an abortion, you know? And mm-hmm. so you get into those morality questions, and mm-hmm. it's tricky, man. It's real tricky. Fascinating, but tricky. Lady Rock, what do you got?
Well, this is about Steve Harvey. He recently said in an interview that he has quit his stand-up career, and not because he doesn't want to do it again, but mainly because he's in fear of cancel culture.
Oh, sure.
Okay, so he doesn't want that to ruin his TV career. So he's not really done with TV yet, but he said once he's done with that he might come out with a comedy special, and it'll be called, well, this is it.
Everything I haven't said for the last.
Yeah, he said, if I had tried to continue as a stand-up, there's no way I would maintain a TV career, because political correctness has killed comedy. Every joke you tell now, it hurts somebody's feelings.
That's the crazy thing about this. And then you find the few guys that have been able to navigate that and still be really funny. Nate Bargatze being one of them. Like, he's not offensive. He's really clean. He is a believer, but he's not a Christian comedian.
Right.
And he could do his show in a church. He could do his show in a theater, an arena, mm-hmm. and it's still really funny, but he's super rare. Like, not everybody can do that.
But does that mean that comedy has to be something that does hurt people's feelings then? If Nate Bargatze can do it and he's one of your favorites,
right,
then is it needed for comedy?
Yes. I think because not everybody works on the same level, and typically comedy has a victim. You know, you're pointing out some irony or some stereotype and things
Nate
like that.
Nate usually makes it himself.
Right. And so and the thing about this is I think when we get to a place inside of comedy that we are so upset and offended by everything, then that's what, to Steve Harvey's point, he's like, everyone gets so bothered about things that really aren't a big deal, but they make it a big deal. Mm-hmm. And so you kill comedy because of the cancel culture nature of it. Like, I fully understand that. Now, do I think you need to be out in the clubs working blue and saying things just to be offensive? I don't think so, but I wouldn't, but I do think that there's a place for that, you know, and I do think that comedy pushing boundaries has always been something that is, well, I hate to use the term like healthy, but somehow when you work through things, comedians can say the things that are like a pressure valve for people that you can't say at work, you can't say at your job. You can't say in your house or whatever, but someone else gives voice to it, and you're like, oh, that's why I feel. It's like a pressure release valve is what comedy is, I think, for people.
But is that the right place? Is that the right avenue?
Comedy, for sure. I think that's the one place where it's actually okay and where it can be, you know, told with a joke and with a smile and with a laugh, and everybody can walk away friends at the end of a comedy night. Like, you can go to a comedy night and the comedian on stage starts riffing in the crowd and starts making fun of people in the crowd. But it's a shared experience. And I think most people, some will get offended, but a lot of people walk away from that going, that was funny. Like, I got made fun of by Carrot Top, of all people. You know, and like he just ripped me apart. I sat in the front row. But it was at the end of the day, I'm like, that was funny. You know, like, I don't care. It's not a big deal. All of that to say, I definitely have a different barometer for humor than some people, and certainly more a different barometer than what the current climate is. So I respect the ability that people can still do. I think they should still have the right to do it. I think that's it. I'm not saying that I agree with the content always, but I think you got to have a place, you've got to have the right to say the things that maybe aren't popular, especially in comedy, because that still protects your right to say your things about faith and about other things. You know, I think when we cancel it all, I'm like, you can't say this. That's dangerous for everybody.
I think the difference is maybe social media has played a part in this, because if you go to a comedy club, you're expecting to laugh. You've probably got that twisted sense of humor that can take those kind of jokes, and your feelings don't get hurt. But now you can film something and that can be posted, or you can post a joke on Twitter about what you heard from this comedian, and that can spread like wildfire. Sure. Now everybody that wasn't in the comedy club gets to know everything that you've said without having to pay a ticket.
It's so tricky though. Like for example, the other day on Instagram, I posted I was at a bookstore. My daughter drugged me to a bookstore. She had to go to a bookstore that she loves before she left. And I'm like, ugh, all these pretentious reading people. I was literally playing games on my phone. But I saw this lady in the cell help section, so I took a quick picture, and it just says self-help, and I just the caption was something to the effect of, is it judgy or just curious if you look at someone in the self-help section of a bookstore and go, wonder what's going on there, you know? So just being funny. Mm-hmm. like I don't find that offensive at all. Mm-hmm. But then there were some comments and things like that, like, you're being super judgy and this is horrible, you know? And like, I didn't see it like that at all. I saw it as funny and more of a amusing antidote, you know? Anecdote. Mm-hmm. And so, like, it was a commentary. Like, I don't find it offensive at all. But other people did. Like, should I be canceled because of that? No, I don't think so. Like, I hope not. Mm-hmm. But when we get so overly sensitive, and you want to cancel over this, and he wants to cancel over that, and she wants to cancel over this, then you can't do anything. You can't mm-hmm. do or say anything because everyone's offended every day. That's where it's a problem. Mm-hmm. You have to have those places where people can say what they feel and say what they think, for the love of all that's holy. And comedy clubs is the best place for that. So, anywho, there's our dissertation on comedy. Whew. I would love to be on Nate Bargatze's podcast and talk with him about this stuff.
Like, love for him to be on our podcast.
That's not going to happen. He's way bigger than us. And like me thinking I could be on his. But I'd love to talk about that stuff, because like, he's genuinely, genuinely funny. It is interesting because we had had John Crist on a couple times before, like his thing where his, I guess, I hate to say fall from grace, I just his trouble that he had gotten into. And like, I've talked to him since, and I want to go to lunch with him and just talk with him about stuff, because like, he and I always had these deep conversations. We didn't talk about like we weren't funny at all or trying to be funny at all, but we ended up, I think there's this weird truth serum for both of us in talking about comedy and mental health and things like that, where he was saying things that he didn't say anywhere else, and me to the same degree. Like, there, I think there's this weird understanding of this, these principles that I think he and I share, actually. And so I saw him, I caught up with him real quickly, and I just kind of want to see where, like, he's at. But then it's weird, man. Like, there would be people that if I had him in on the podcast that would be offended by that too. And so what, he doesn't have the right to change, grow, and speak his mind anymore? Mm-hmm. You know, and we're gonna cancel you. Hey, you had John Crist on, you know, he's a sinner. Hey, guess what, you know, you're a sinner. You know, mm-hmm. what, guess what, I'm a sinner. We all are, man. Like, and mm-hmm. and that's the problem with cancel culture.
Mm-hmm.
So anyhow, I just stepped off my soapbox. So, and with that, we'll step into birthdays.
All right.
Professional segue. See, if you're just starting a podcast, learn that kind of stuff.
Okay, so we have no birthdays, but, I have a question.
Okay.
And it is from Joanne. So the question is, what was your favorite game as a child, and what is your favorite game now?
Like, board games with chutes and ladders. I loved chutes and ladders. That was so much fun.
It's easy to understand.
Pretty much, yeah. And what is it? Candyland was the worst for me because I was colorblind. So I was like, it was horrible. I never got the joy of Candyland.
Are any of your siblings colorblind?
I think my brother is. My youngest brother is.
I forget that all the time.
Yeah. And so, I love Canasta. We play Canasta a lot. Mm-hmm. My mom had taught
that's the Oregon Trail. I get Canasta and Oregon Trail mixed up.
Oh, they're very different.
Yeah, I get those mixed up.
No, I've never played Oregon Trail.
But Canasta is where you have to, like, build log cabins or something.
Nope. That is, Canasta is a card game. I think you're thinking of Settlers.
Settlers of Catan?
Yes. Catan, Canasta, I could see
a
that.
Close.
Yeah. Say yes, because that's the only thing that makes that even
logical. Sure. I thought you were going to say Monopoly Deal.
I haven't played Monopoly Deal in forever, and Gavin loves it, and he and I have never played. We need to play one time just to see who is the reigning dominant Monopoly Deal player.
And see how different our rules are, because everyone's got, like, different rules that they play by.
That is a really good game. Now, what is yours, Rock, was and is?
Back in the day, I would say it was a tie between Mall Madness, which was a big game back in, like, the 90s.
I played that with Haley a lot. I actually did enjoy that.
Yeah, because you got a credit card that you could, like, zip through.
Mm-hmm.
But I also liked Pretty Pretty Princess.
Oh, gosh. I had to play that so much.
I loved it.
Oh, my gosh. With the necklaces and the tiaras.
Yes.
I had to play that with my daughter so many times. I hated that game.
Okay, so
but I was a good dad.
Now, I would say my favorite game is Dutch Blitz.
Yeah, that's the one.
It gets ugly. It gets competitive. But because it's a fast moving game, but oh, it's so much fun.
I like Spoons. Do you ever play Spoons?
I have, and I've seen people get injured.
We had some friends that play Spoons, and they played it differently. So you played the hand, all the spoons were on a raft in the middle of the pool. And so when someone got their thing, they'd yell, "Spoons!" And you'd have to run and dive into the pool to try to get a spoon. I'm like, that's next level.
Yeah, that sounds like a hazard waiting to happen.
Yeah, no injuries here.
Yeah. Gavin.
I really enjoyed playing Sorry as a kid.
Oh, we just played that the other day.
It's super fun.
I love that game.
I love anything that's simple because I'm not, like, a good thinker when it comes to games. Like, I want to be good at, so, like, my favorite version or my favorite game right now is Monopoly, and I think I got lucky one time and won it, and I've loved it for the last 2 years, but I've never won since because I don't think
that's a losing streak.
Exactly. I don't think I'm that good at it, but I still like it based on the one time I won.
Sorry in my house is brutal.
Yeah.
My daughter and my wife gang up on me. It is just
as they
brutal.
Should.
Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, cuz we have a dance when you send somebody home. It's just shy of full contact.
So fun.
All right. Well, there you go. That is going to do it for your Aftercast today. And again,
as always,
thanks for being a potty.